Hello and welcome to the LNG Wrap, which I'm producing in collaboration with the World LNG and Gas Series. And this week, I'm pleased to be joined by Vincent Demoury, the Secretary General and Head of Communications and Public Relations at the International Group of LNG Importers. This is a non-profit organisation whose objectives are to promote the development of activities related to LNG, and it has 86 members and covers more than 90% of the LNG global flows. Most of you will recognise the organisation by its acronym GIIGNL, and you will perhaps know about the very useful annual report they issue, which gives a concise summary of annual performance along with statistics and a useful data bank of information that reveals trends. It's available to download for free from the GIIGNL website. So Vincent is here to discuss with me some of the trends relating to the evolution of spot and short-term trading and contracting trends, and why we have centred our theme correspondingly around the long and short of it. Good morning, Vincent, and welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, Pat, and thank you very much for having me on your podcast.
It's great to have you here, and we've got lots to cover, so let's start. You certainly captured the headlines about 5 or 6 weeks ago in the media with this year's report, because it highlighted the growing spot and short-term business in global LNG, I think currently sitting at around 142 million tonnes and 40% of the global business. What are GIIGNL's views of these trends? Is 2020 a one-off, or are they going to continue to grow in your view?
Well, what we can see is that spot and short-term trade has been on a steady rise for the last few years. We've seen, as you said, a remarkable growth last year of more than 20% in volume. So spot and short-term now reaches 40% of total trade. We see that trades are becoming more complex. We see more diversions. We see partial loadings and unloadings multiplying, as well as ship-to-ship transfers. And we can definitely interpret these signs as a hint of growing market flexibility. Now, what we think is that spot and short-term is underpinned by several factors. The first one is the growth of flexible volumes from the US and from Australia. We see also a growing role of portfolio players and traders. And last year, we have seen lower spot prices, which motivated some of the more price-sensitive buyers like India, for instance, to buy more spot LNG. We also saw countries like Japan exert downward quantity tolerance to buy more spot, and other countries like China or Turkey who arbitrated between pipeline gas and more spot LNG. So overall, we think that buyers are always looking for the best price, of course, and the best flexibility. This does not mean that spot and short term will be increasing by the same amount in the next coming years, because we are also in a particular situation where we are coming at the end of the ramp up of the US projects. So the next few years will be interesting to follow. At the same time, the spot and short-term share may at some point hit a ceiling because supply security remains an important element in LNG, and not all buyers have trading and optimization capabilities also. So this will be interesting to follow.
That's really interesting for me. Of course, we have in the early 2020s a period where we've got several long-term contracts, you know, contracts which have been running now for nearly 20 years, they're going to be expiring. Given what you've said about the sort of buyers wanting flexibility, et cetera, but also wanting some security of supply, what's your view on recontracting trends? Will we see a lot of buyers opting for supply security, or do we think they will be looking predominantly for flexibility?
That's a very good question. If we look at the next few years, about 100 million tons of long-term contracts are due to expire by 2025. And among these 100 million tons of contracts, about 30 million tons are contracts with Japanese buyers. So what we see generally is that long-term contracts of 20 or 25 years are generally replaced with the shorter ones. And this trend, we think, will continue. Now, whether long-term contracts will be renewed or not depends on several factors. The first one is, of course, the perception of the future market balance, of the supply and demand balance, and also the perception of LNG's availability in the coming years. Will there be enough feed gas to feed the projects in Algeria and Indonesia? Will Mozambique go ahead or not? Now, on the demand side, there is some uncertainty also. Buyers are weighing the consequences of the energy transition and of net zero targets on their future procurements. And so this creates some uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And the third driver, I would say, is also the commercial strategy of the project sponsors. For instance, countries like Nigeria may prioritize the remarketing of their volumes, while for Qatar, you may see a different strategy, which maybe to sell volumes from existing trains on a spot and short-term basis and volumes from new trains, for instance, on a more long-term basis. Qatar is the largest source of expiring contracts between now and 2024. Some 17 million tons or so of contracts are due to expire. So there is a question as to what Qatar will do and whether also the potential expansion partners will be able to provide an outlet for these volumes.
Yes, and you've touched on several points here. Of course, we've got new liquefaction projects being developed everywhere. And for some countries, they are sort of brownfield expansions. For some, they're greenfield. And in the last couple of weeks, we've seen two 10-year deals being concluded by Tellurian with Gunvor and Vitol. And people are already asking me, is 10-year deals the new long-term deal duration? And what's the implication for plants that need project finance? What's your views on that?
If we look at contracts signed in 2020, the average duration of contracts was around 13 years. It's relatively in line with the average duration of the last 5 years. So I would say we are already below the typical 20-year contracts that we were seeing maybe in the last decades. The majority of contracts signed since the start of 2021 was rather around 10 years, as you rightly said, with about half of them involving aggregators and traders who are now warehousing long-term supply and reselling volumes on a shorter-term basis. So what we might see is an increasing role of aggregators and traders as they are able to take more risk than pure buyers to guarantee the viability of future projects. And that's what you're seeing with the contracts that you were mentioning, which were both 10-year contracts with traders. Now, yes. That being said, LNG remains a very capital intensive industry and long-term contracts remain needed to underpin new projects. Spare capacity is not the norm in LNG. And from a buyer perspective, security of supply is also essential. And that's why we don't see a fully commoditized market in the coming years.
Yes. I mean, you've picked up on a nuance, or I've picked up on a nuance that you've raised here. I just wanted to confirm it with you that there is a trend of more sort of portfolio aggregators and traders perhaps warehousing risk and taking on longer term deals to disaggregate it and resell it, perhaps in smaller contracts into the market. So you've got them actually performing a very good service there, I think, of helping to support projects, but on the other hand, creating a portfolio they can sell according to how the end user customer wants to buy. Is that correct?
That's exactly it.
So yeah, in fact, it's the whole impact, isn't it, of energy transitions, which create a lot of uncertainty, which perhaps are pushing buyers to shorter term and more flexibility in their contracts. And in respect of energy transitions, Vincent, GIIG GNL are developing a framework for the measurement, reporting and verification of carbon emissions from LNG. Can you tell us about this new initiative that you're working on?
Yes, absolutely, Pat. So in recent months, we have seen regulatory scrutiny on emissions increasing. We have also seen industry's awareness of the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions increase. And at GIGNL, we came to the consensus that it was urgent to develop a framework for the monitoring, reporting, and verification of emissions to make sure that LNG can be traded on a sustainable basis. Now, we observe that there are several challenges to the monitoring, reporting, and verification of emissions. And this challenging appeared in a more blatant way when we saw the first carbon neutral LNG transactions being performed. We very quickly saw that the denomination carbon neutral was in fact encompassing different realities. In some cases, you had all the stages of the LNG chain offsets through the purchase of carbon credits, but in other cases, we saw that only a portion of the chain was offset. So there is no common terminology, and there is also today no LNG specific reference for quantifying emissions. So our objective within GIGNL is to come up with a consistent MRV framework, which includes at least CO2 and methane emissions. And this framework should be LNG specific and also aligned with the existing reporting frameworks. We are aware that we may not come up with a framework which will be perfect from the start, but we want to come up with a framework which will be implemented quickly in the different stages of the LNG chain, and which will be adapted as regulation, best practices, and also technologies evolve. So this is a big challenge for the industry that we are ready to take on. We have constituted a task force of more than 30 experts from our member companies. And this is a priority objective now for GIGNL, but also for the industry.
I have to say, you know, I really admire the way that you seize that initiative. And with, as you say, you have 86 members, you are sort of perfectly positioned to have this collaborative effort, which I think is what it really needs. Nevertheless, it is a huge challenge. And I'm going to pick up on one word only that you used in that description to me, and it was the word quickly. How quickly could you possibly put something like this in place?
Well, our goal is to start implementing this from the end of the current year. So from October, we will publish this first framework. As I said, it will not be perfect from the start, but we are conscious that we have all the main players around the table, and that there is a great momentum and a great window of opportunity to make this a real game changer for the industry.
And I sort of really admire what you're doing here. And if people listening to this podcast want to be involved in it, what should they be doing?
Well, they should get in contact with us. We are addressing the challenge now. We're ready to work actively with policymakers, but also with any interested stakeholders, to make sure that the framework is robust, is pragmatic, and also addresses the expectations of the industry, because there would be no point in addressing only the expectations of one segment of the chain. This is a framework which will be covering emissions along the entire value chain.
Absolutely. Well, maybe I'll, in the first instance, point them to yourself, Vincent, in GIGNL to sort of be in contact with them. But I want to say thank you so much for joining me today. We've covered a lot of ground, and you know yourself that I'll be inviting you back for part two of this discussion sometime in the coming months. But thank you very much for all of your input today, and look forward to seeing this being a success for you.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Okay, thank you and goodbye.